Hello, my magical friends. My name is Ayumi. My pronouns are she, her, hers, and you're listening to Sparkle Side Chats with Magical Girl Ayu. Whether it's your first or 46th time listening, we welcome you to our space to celebrate magical girls from every corner of the world. So today we have quite a little bit to talk about with what I've been watching and reading, and then we also have some news before we get to today's topic. So let's get started. First off, I just wanted to point out if there's any sound quality problems today with my voice. I have really intense allergies today. It just seems that any time that it's not raining all over the place here in Japan, the pollen is very active right now. So I am low-key suffering, but don't worry. I'm just fine. I'm not sick, just dealing with those things. But anyway, we'll do the news first because it's just one piece of news, but it's a big one. So of course, if you've been listening to the podcast, then you already know that we have been following along with the announcements of Tokyo Mew Mew New, which will come out sometime next year. We still don't have a lot of information about that exactly, but slowly but surely, they have been trickling all sorts of information. So last week, there was kind of a live announcement party online, and viewers could stick around for that. And once that was finished, then they published the announcements of that live meeting, where we got to see for the first time the entire Mew Mew team and all of their updates to their outfits, and they're all very cute. There are some interesting, significant changes to the costume. Some of it is, of course, based on the changes made in the Tokyo Mew Mew Return comic that came out last year, but there are some other things that are even more changed from that. So it's pretty exciting to see the differences. They're very cute. I'm very excited. We also got a little promotional video, a teaser, if you will, and that gave us the ability to listen to the characters for the first time in character. So we got to hear all five girls, and that was really exciting. And then the last announcement that we had was the announcement of the series composer. They announced that it would be Yasuharu Takanashi. He is a very, very big composer for a lot of kids' series, but in particular, a lot of Magical Girl series. So he's worked on Hell Girl. He's worked on a lot of parts of Sailor Moon Crystal. He's also composed on four different Precure series, Fresh Precure, Heartcatch, Sweet and Smile, some nice classic ones, as well as the films that they were part of. He also has worked on Show by Rock. I think he worked on all seasons of Show by Rock, and he went back to do Hell Girl when they had the most recent film of that as well, back in 2018. And he also worked on the Sailor Moon Eternal movies. So yeah, I would say he's definitely a veteran for sure of the genre for music composition. So really looking forward to seeing what he brings to the table with Tokyo Mew Mew New. I hope you are all as excited as I am. I would love to hear what you think about this choice, as well as, yeah, what do you think of the voices as well? There are some differences. For me, I've been rewatching the original Tokyo Mew Mew very recently, so it's very fresh in my mind. So hearing the differences in the voices already is very interesting. But the main thing that stood out to me a lot is that Pudding sounds a little bit older, so that's interesting. I really love the pigtails they gave her in her new Mew Pudding form, but yeah. Okay, great. So with that, we're going to move on to what I've been watching and reading. So as always, I'm trying to mostly focus on stuff I've been finishing watching, because otherwise it would take forever to talk about it all, but also because I actually finished more than I have time to talk about today, so you'll hear about those in next week's episode, which is another very exciting episode. And so let me just start off with that. So the first thing I finished watching is Revolutionary Girl Utena, or Shoujo Kakumei Utena. So this is a very big series. This is one that is kind of complicated to try to discuss, but I enjoyed every episode. It was a 39 episode series. Each volume had 5 episodes. So I was watching about 5 episodes a week. And oof, it was an emotional roller coaster to say the least, and I will definitely be watching it again and again in the future. As for the question of whether or not it's a magical girl series, it's definitely something commenting more on the broader genre of works for girls or shoujo series, and that is something to consider, but there are definitely fantastical elements to it, so for me, it is still part of the genre. Then I also finished the first season of Magic Knight Ray Earth. So this series has two different seasons. Actually, at first, it took me a while just to even figure out which season was which, because they were all under the same name as Magic Knight Ray Earth, and then they were broadcast pretty much consecutively, so it was hard for me at first to figure out where one started and where one ended. But I finished the first season. It was pretty cool. It's definitely surprising that I didn't get into the series when I was younger, but I say that a lot about a lot of 90s stuff, to be honest, that I haven't gotten to watch yet. But yeah. And finally, I wanted to mention Untitled Magical Girl Act 4. So this is still something that is a very mysterious series. We still don't know what we're getting exactly. But the fourth video of the series, if you can call it that, has been put up on YouTube. It came out back on July 15th, but of course we don't talk about new stuff during the week where we have creator episodes, so that's why I hadn't brought it up yet, but I'll put a link in the show notes to it. It's our first look at the 90s era magical girl group, and is there some interesting things going on there. Again, it's like so clear that whoever is making the series really, really knows their stuff when it comes to the generational differences in magical girls, which is very fascinating. It's definitely a bit on the grittier side, which also makes a lot of sense for a 90s series. There's a lot of grit, especially in comparison to the 80s, when it comes to magical girls. And finally, I wanted to mention something I had finished or caught up reading. So I was a little on the fence about whether to talk about this series, to be honest, and I'll explain why in a minute, but I decided to read Apricot Cookie. This has come up time and time again as a recommendation to me, both from listeners to the podcast and also from previous guests. And so I was warned that it was kind of a not safe for work comic, and I was like, okay, sure. So it's a very curious comic. Definitely the artist is very aware of a lot of tropes of magical girls, and definitely has some interesting twists and turns that are very fun. Definitely also just very technically skilled comic illustration. I am a little concerned about the use of nudity in the series and just, yeah, generally sexualizing underage characters, even if it's for comedy. Yeah, that for me is a little uncomfortable. Also, some of the stuff about the trans character in the series for me feels a little strange. Maybe needed some sensitivity reading before going through with that storyline, but it's also just generally very confusing for me in that respect. There's a lot of things I don't know, but all in all, I do think that there is stuff there that is entertaining to some people. So for me, it's like a 6 out of 10, I want to say. Like, there are a lot of things that are cool and interesting about it, but I generally don't know if I would be able to recommend it to everyone, if that makes sense. Of course, like for example, we talked about Fallen last week with creator Ogawa Buruku, and that series also definitely has some very like sexual aspects, but those are only with older characters. All of those characters are adults. So for me, it's like pretty whatever. But that being said, yeah, in this case, I'm just a little uneasy about it. So I would prefer if there were some changes made to that story, perhaps. But it's been something that has been brought up to me a lot, like publicly. So I felt I had to give it a full reading and give my comments. So it is curious. There are certainly a lot of things I'm very curious about and will probably continue reading just to get those questions answered. But I'm not excited about it, to be honest. Okay. Well, with all of that, let's move on to today's episode. So, today's topic, of course, we are in full precure mode this week, and so today we are talking about Star Twinkle Precure. So this is interesting because this is like thinking about the start of this podcast. This is the last series that was completed back when we started last year. And yes, it is almost a year into this podcast, which is very hard to believe. This is from 2019, and this was a very big season for the history of Precure for a number of reasons. So for anyone who can read Japanese, I did link to an article, which was an interview with one of the creators of that season, talking about how they are trying to appeal more to a global market with this particular season, which I found very interesting because this is a season that is not yet available to a wide audience around the world. But I wonder if this season is the reason why we were finally able to get Precure last year during the Healing Good season. I don't know how the licensing world works in this case, but I would assume that they could pitch it to companies around the world or whatever with this particular season. And we use the term dark skin when we have our discussion today, but I do want to point out that Cure Soleil is, in the article in Japanese, specifically considered a brown character. I don't know if this is a major thing that should be pointed out, just because when people generally use the term darker skinned, it's usually a bit darker than what Elena or Cure Soleil is. But that aspect is very important in terms of representation, so that was very exciting. And yeah, I think that's all I have to say at the top up here. I think that this particular season is quite popular with good reason, and I do wish more people could watch it legally. So we can only hope, because we already know that English subtitles exist for the series, that hopefully they will be able to get that over to a website such as Crunchyroll where people can watch it. Try to let companies know what the fans want, and if you want more Precure, you gotta let people know. So, you know, obviously Crunchyroll is the easiest choice, considering that they already have several seasons of Precure. That would make the most sense. That being said, I really do hope that if that's the case, that someone other than Crunchyroll is responsible for the translation, because they are not very good at paying their translators enough. It's a well-known problem in the industry. But yeah, my guest today is Cloud, who is the first person that I've gotten on the podcast off of Instagram, which is interesting. So they approached me about it quite a long time ago about wanting to be on the podcast. And they have two different accounts. I first knew them under their main account, which is Maho Monthly. And they also function under Magical Girl Obsessed, which is a bit more of a personal account. But yes, either way, they're an artist. They're Gen Z-er, they're a Zoomer, so we have that perspective as well. I think you'll be able to hear it because I am a millennial and I don't really think about it too much, but I definitely think there's a generational difference in how we approach the different aspects of this particular season of Precure. So I do think that expectations can be very different, generationally speaking. I'm not gonna lie, this conversation did make me feel a little old, but yeah, I do think it's interesting to get other voices. And so hearing also from our first guest, whose first Magical Girl series was Glitter Force, was very interesting. So yeah, I think that's everything that I have to say. So please enjoy my chat with Cloud about Star Twinkle Precure. Okay, so today we're going to be talking about Star Twinkle Precure from 2019, and I'm very excited for our guest. Can you please introduce yourself?
Hello, my name is Cloud. I go by she, her, or they, them. It really up to you. And I'm so excited to be on the podcast.
Yeah, excited to have you on. So what is your history with the magical girl genre?
Well, I would say my first magical girl show that I actually watched was probably Glitter Force on Netflix. And then later through that, I found Precure as a whole. And I also want to say I also had some interest in Sailor Moon, as most people usually do when getting into the magical girl genre, as well as Star versus the Forces of Evil.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that's my history.
Can you tell us your age, if that's okay?
I am 19 years old, and I'm American, I guess.
Yeah, good context for your podcast. Great. So, yeah, you are quite younger than me, but I think you might be our first guest whose first Magical Girl series was Glitter Force. So I do want to ask more about that, like your experience with watching it as Glitter Force first.
I was just browsing through Netflix, as one usually do as a kid, and I saw this bright, glittery rainbow poster going across my feed. And I was like, ooh, what's this? So I clicked on it and found Glitter Force that way. And at first I was like, oh my god, I love this so much. But then after all the negativity with Glitter Force and its dubbing, I started following that mob mentality until recently. I was like, hey, maybe it's okay to like different stuff, you know?
Yeah, this is a pro Glitter Force space, so no worries. Yeah. So after watching Glitter Force, how did you come to figure out that it was Precure, that it was something a little different than how it was advertised, I guess?
I wanted to see if there was any more Glitter Force to actually watch. So I was like typing up Glitter Force in Google, and then I found the wiki page to Smile Precure. And I actually never went back and watched Smile Precure, but I do plan to eventually. I was like, whoa, there's this whole franchise of Precure. And then that's where I got to today. I watched only 5 seasons of Precure, counting Glitter Force. Kira Kira Precure a la mode, Star Twinkle Precure, Healing Good Precure, Tropical Rouge Precure.
That makes sense. So basically, you got into the series and then you ended up just kind of watching what was already on, like, more recently.
Mm-hmm.
Are you interested in watching previous seasons of Precure?
Oh, absolutely. Oh, wait, I also forgot to mention I also watched Go Princess. I'm still in the process of watching it, but I guess that counts as 6.
Mm-hmm.
I want to watch Mahoutsukai. I really want to watch Happiness Charge because there's, like, so much hate surrounding it, and I want to find out for myself if it's actually bad or good.
Mm-hmm.
I want to watch Heart Catch. I want to watch Hugto. That's all I could think of right now.
Generally, you're very interested in watching previous seasons.
Yes, absolutely.
Great. Okay, so let's get into Star Twinkle specifically. So, of course, this is one that you said you wanted to talk to me about. How did you get into this season specifically? Did you just watch it as it was airing at the time?
I did. I initially found out that Star Twinkle Precure was airing at the usual time that seasons are usually spoiled, because at the time I didn't want to watch Hugto because it didn't really intrigue me at that time. So I found out whilst I was finishing up Kira Kira Precure out of mode.
Okay, why is it that you wanted to talk about Star Twinkle specifically?
Mostly because it's my favorite season. In general, it's my favorite anime ever. I guess you could say my interest for it is out of this world. I'm sorry.
That's okay. Yeah, it's a very distinct season. It's a very strong season of Precure, and it also marks like a lot of firsts, a lot of new things going on. So our last episode on Precure was about Hug Precure. So that was from 2018. And that season kind of started what is now currently going on in the past few seasons of Precure, where the idea of anyone being able to become Precure has become very literal. Every season, something that is not human becomes a Precure. And this is a season continuing that with alien characters. And it's a very interesting season. The themes are space, of course, and also imagination. There's definitely this artistic aspect to it. Transformation sequences are very active, but in this one in particular, it's very active in that they sing along and they also draw themselves, basically.
It's great.
Yeah, it's a
This
very,
is
very
great.
good season. There's just a lot of different things going on, so I guess we should kind of just get right into things. Okay, so let's talk about the Cure characters first. So this season we start with four Precure and then later get a fifth one added to the team. So we have Cure Star, Cure Milky, Cure Soleil, Cure Selene. So let's start with Cure Star, or Hikaru
I love her. She's my baby. I
Hoshina.
adopted her. I love her so much. I think the reason why is I just see her as a daughter, or in the fact that I love her so much as a character. I really see myself, my younger, obviously I'm young, but like younger self in her. I am very artsy. I love space. Like, if I could visibly show you how much I love space by counting stars in the sky, I would not be able to finish counting all the stars in the sky before my life passes.
Yeah, so she is very interested in space and in constellations. So she is always trying to come up with new constellations. She's studying the sky. She already knows she wants to go to space someday. And yeah, we start our story with her drawing a very cute constellation and it coming to life.
Imagine that you're just drawing and then like it suddenly comes to life. That'd be terrifying.
Yeah, I could think of many contexts where that would be very terrifying. Yeah. She basically accidentally summons this creature that we later learn is a fairy. Yes, Fua is a very interesting character. She is named by Hikaru because she says Fua a lot. She's very fluffy and she likes to say so. And then immediately upon the first episode, we also end up meeting our second character who will join the team, and that is an alien named Lala. And so she becomes Cure Milky. Yeah.
Personally, Lala is my least favorite character.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
And then also when you was talking about Fua, I just realized that doesn't Fua means fluffy?
Yeah, Fua Fua does mean fluffy. Yeah.
Yeah, I just realized that.
So it's like naming her Fluff or something, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah,
I don't know how my brain did not correlate that together, but it's better late than never.
Can I ask why Lala's your least favorite character?
She gets a lot of screen time, and sometimes I love how the voice actress plays Lala, but I feel like Lala's personality is not the best. With the current season, Laura, they pretty much have kind of similar personalities, but I feel like Laura is funnier with how her personality bounces off different characters compared to Lala. That's just my personal thing. I just
Okay.
don't like her personalities.
That's very interesting. I like all the characters just fine, but I know a lot of people for whom Lala is their favorite character this season, so I just find that very
Yeah,
interesting. Yeah.
same.
She is an interesting character anyway, because she is the first alien to become a Precure. She comes from a faraway planet that is very advanced, and they are always relying on technology, and certainly it's an interesting metaphor there, which I'm sure we can get into later. She doesn't understand why, like, there's such a low chance for her to become Precure, but she really wants to become one. I think that part is very interesting because, again, with her relying on her AI in her rocket, she is asking, oh, what was the chance for Hikaru to become Precure? And she realizes it's the same amount. She becomes Cure Milky, like the Milky Way. And I think she's a very interesting character because she joins her school and decides to live life as a human. She can't let anyone know that she's an alien, of course, but yeah. There are two older students at the school who joined the Precure team. So let's move on to Elena or Cure Soleil.
I do love Elena. I just feel like they could have done so much more with her, just personally. I feel like she didn't get enough screen time. I feel like if she had more screen time, then I would probably love her way more. Especially since, like, she's our first darker skin cure compared to, like, all the other ones. She's, like, Mexican and Japanese, if I remember correctly. And, like, I love her, but I just feel like they could have done a lot more with her.
Well, we can put a pin on that. I think that they did a lot with her character compared to other half Japanese characters in the past. Cure Lemonade from Yes Precure 5 or Cure Anfani or Henri from Hug Precure. They really actually handled and like tackled what her being mixed race means. And especially this season, there are a lot of characters. So I think that's part of the main reason why they didn't have more time to handle other things about her. But I do think that they were very responsible in how they handled having this first precure with darker skin. Which we could also talk about later, yeah.
I feel like they were also very respectful and also trying not to tread on any toes in case something happens. Like, that's obviously something that you also have to pay attention for so you don't offend anyone. But I feel like they were also respectful in showing how people that look different from us would be treated. Or in the Japanese case, who doesn't look stereotypically Japanese? Obviously, not the yellow skin and stuff like that. Like, pale skin, if you know what I mean.
Yellow skin is a very Western idea of Asian people, so that's not really something that happens in Japan, but
Thankfully.
it's like, they did handle the fact that, like, okay, we have a character like this, we have to actually address it. I do think it's interesting that they made her Mexican and Japanese specifically because it was a topic of interest in Japan at that time, so it makes sense. But it's like, oh, this is happening because I don't know, Japanese people were discovering tacos, and we can get into a bit more like how that was handled later. But being Mexican and Japanese, like, there's a lot there that could have gone wrong. So I do think generally they did a good job. Great, and then we have her friend and our final member of the school and main cure team is Madoka or Cure Selene or Cure Selene.
She's my second favorite character out of the entire cast. I don't know why. When I first started watching it, she was not my favorite character at all. And then for some reason, out of nowhere, my brain was just seeing, was like, "Hey, I like purple." Like, I don't know why I like her so much as a second favorite character, but she definitely grew into one of my favorite characters. She's basically like a mix of the trope for the usual blue and purple cures, how they're student council or very smart or very rich. So that's also another trope that is in there besides the pink Genki lead.
She is very much in a lot of ways that blue cure stereotype for Precure, despite being purple. And she is also very interesting generally. It's interesting because, especially since she is friends with Elena, like, I would say that Madoka is like almost aggressively so, like the most traditionally Japanese character. She does Japanese archery as her hobby, or that's her club that she's in, and she's like always doing all sorts of things. And then like her family is very strict. Her family dynamic is also very interesting because, again, this is a series about aliens and space, and as far as most people on Earth are concerned, there are no aliens. But I should mention also, Hikaru's father is kind of like, those two dads are this interesting parallel of like different approaches to aliens. Yeah, Madoka's father is basically a cop, I guess.
If I remember correctly, he's a government official, a government agent who specializes in that sort of stuff. Finding aliens or UFOs or anything paranormal.
Yeah.
I remember one specific episode that he was trying to find aliens, proof of aliens, and also the other episode where they were quote unquote filming a movie.
That isn't another interesting thing we could talk about. Yeah, the very interesting side character this season.
He's very interesting indeed.
But yeah, so like he's like basically trying to find aliens because he thinks all aliens that would come to Earth are a threat. And he also like has a rule that his family cannot keep secrets, which is like, dude, what are you talking about? So weird, so unrealistic. He's interesting, especially in comparison to Hikaru's father, who travels the world looking for cryptids. And if there is evidence of aliens, he's like, oh, that's so awesome, you know? It's so twinkle,
Yeah.
yeah.
If I'm not wrong, Hikaru got her catchphrase Kiraeva from her dad.
Yeah.
And I just want to say this verse. I use Kiraeva just unironically because I thought that was such a fun catchphrase because, you know, twin cool or some of her other ones that I cannot remember at the moment. It just really stuck with me and it stayed inside my vocabulary to the point where I'll just use it without thinking.
Every season of Precure, there are catchphrases, and in this case, that would be the main one that is very important. Yeah, Twin Cool is the. What's interesting, so Twin Cool is the fan translation of Kirayaba that ended up getting adopted officially. It's been used now in English language Precure merchandise, so that's very interesting. Yeah, it shows
I love it.
an increased awareness, I think, of the fandom internationally speaking. Yeah.
Yes, and it's great, and I love it so much.
Oh, let's talk about Fua and prunes before we continue.
Ooh, yes,
Yeah.
let's talk about them.
So those are our two fairies, so to speak. Fua is the one who actually has like powers. Fua is kind of a baby, not as much of a baby as previous seasons of Precure, but kind of baby-like. When Fua first appears, she only can say Fua. Later on, she can actually speak a bit more. But yeah, she is the fluffiest thing you've ever seen, and it's very cute.
It's adorable.
Yeah, she like creates portals through space, so that's how the Precure can travel to other planets, which we haven't gotten into, but they do that. They fly around in a rocket.
And it's amazing. The scenery for all of that is just amazing.
Oh, yes. The aesthetic is definitely something that's very, very strong this season. Lots of bright colors and everything. It's super fun. Again, yeah, it's definitely something that is maybe overly saccharine, depending on the person. Yeah. But yeah, so Fua is very, very powerful, and we can get into that later, but Fua's main goal is to help the Precure as they try to find all the Star Princess pens to revive all the Star Princesses, which we'll talk about later. And she's so cute and sweet. She's basically kind of also being protected by Prunes, who is almost an octopus-like alien. He's like a cross between like a drop of water and an octopus, and he flies around in a UFO, and he's very, very serious, but he softens up to the Precure characters, I think. Yeah.
As well as he can shapeshift into multiple
Oh,
things.
yeah.
He can inflate himself, he could turn into a backpack. You know, Prince, he's just great. He's like almost a fatherly figure, kind of, to the characters. Like, he looks out for them a lot and is just pure and is just amazing.
Yeah, he's a master of disguise, to be sure. But yeah, so they are trying to find, as per everything else, they all have pens to transform into Precure, and then they're looking for more pens from around the universe to awaken the Star Princesses. And there are a lot of interesting stories about learning to accept other cultures or learning how to understand other cultures. And there are a lot more colonialism parallels and stuff, lessons in this season than I expected, which is interesting for, again, a show for kindergartners. But let's talk about our villains. So, our villains, the Naughty Raiders. Nod Raiders is a combination of both a Japanese word, notoru, which means invade, and then raiders. So it's like,
Ah,
yeah.
okay.
It's very interesting because they are again a group of alien characters. Most of the actual main Notres look like they're kind of, especially in comparison to a season like Happiness Charge Precure, the Choi arcs in that season. I would say that, it looks like the most of the Notres are all of these characters that are just kind of generic. They all have this kind of silver and purple suit, and it has no on their face. And you would think that they're just all like, that's how they all look, but later on we find out that they all are actually individuals, so that's also very interesting. Yeah,
Yeah.
the main generals in this season are inspired by yokai from Japanese mythology, which is super cool.
And I love that. I love it so much. I think it's amazing.
Yeah, it's a very interesting choice to do that because it's like, of course, they're from outer space, but they're all very clearly inspired by different kinds of monsters in Japanese folklore specifically.
I only know two of them because I see them often, and that's Kabaro and Tenjo. Aiwan, I think, I want to say she's based off the umbrella with the one eye.
Yeah, so she's a Hitotsume Kozo. They're like a Japanese Cyclops.
Yeah,
Yeah.
they kind of look like an umbrella if I'm not wrong. I might be getting them mixed up, but like.
I think maybe yes, but that's okay. Like, we have a lot of monsters in Japanese mythology. So it's specifically like a bald Cyclops child. Usually a boy, actually. So it's interesting that Aiwan is a girl. Yeah. But yeah, so Kapard is a Kappa and Tenjo is a Tengu. Aiwan is a Hitotsume Kozo. And then finally, Garuoga is an Oni. So it's interesting because, of course, this is kind of like happened before in Precure. We had like Japanese folklore inspired characters, but this is like the most explicitly so. And I think that it was a very interesting choice, I guess, in character design.
I honestly love it. 'Cause like many of the pictures that you'd see, if you're just like searching up the folklore by itself without the Star Twinkle Precure attachment, you'll be like, whoa, those look almost alien-like. And I think it's very quote unquote appropriate. 'Cause like regardless of how you see it, you'll see cryptids as more like alien-like. Like they came from outer space. Like they're not supposed to be here, if you know what I mean. So I think it's very fitting because they look like otherworldly, you know?
I do think it's interesting also because they're based on monsters and, especially because they are very humanized by the end. There's a lot there in terms of like taking something that is seen as a monster, like especially like Kapard. He's a Kappa, and Kappas are like very much that Kind of monster that exists to scare children to like not go into the water, you know.
Yeah, they're very mischievous.
There are still signs all over the place in Japan like warning kids about Kappas because like it's like a more literal thing than like saying, oh, you're gonna drown if you go into the lake or whatever.
If I'm not wrong, it's like if you go near the water or something like that, they'll lure you near or into the water and then like they'll drag you into the water.
So let's talk about the characters more specifically. So Kappard is our first one. He kind of is like very much confronting Hikaru specifically. And, generally with all of the villains, what they're doing is they are twisting imagination, the power of imagination, to turn things evil. So depending on the villain, there are different things that they do to handle that, which is interesting. But he has a weapon that he uses. He powers up that weapon using this twisted imagination and then tries to attack with it specifically. He's a very interesting character. He's very popular, from what I understand. As with many like first generals, he's definitely like very much at odds with Hikaru or Kyustar specifically.
If I'm not wrong, he was kind of jealous in that she could express herself the way that he desired to. And that was like the main thing with most of the villains. They were upset because they couldn't really express the way that they wanted to because people, suppressed them. to feel like they're almost meaningless, almost. And
yeah,
I love how they develop to see the light, shall I say.
Mm-hmm. Each one has a different reason why they basically lack the positive imagination that the Precure have. And so in Kapar's case, his planet was kind to some other aliens, and those aliens took advantage of them and took all their things. Goodness, that sounds very familiar. and so because of that, he feels that it's not okay, like, for Lala to try to accept Earth, and also for Hikaru to be so accepting of other aliens. He just doesn't see a possibility of aliens from other planets working together. Just with pretty much every sci-fi ever, there's this whole idea like one planet has only one culture, essentially. So it's definitely used as a parallel or metaphor for Earth and its many cultures.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, so it's interesting.
It's a good message. During the show, you don't really think about how deep it actually is until you finish it. And then, like, you'd be like, oh, dang. That's... wow.
Mm-hmm.
It's just... I think it's a very good message for kids and adults alike.
Mm. The first time that I really started to see that colonialism metaphor in Star Twinkle Precure was actually very early on, episode 8. That was when they go to Planet Kennel, which is a dog planet, and there's a big fight with Elena and Prince trying to take the star color pen, the Libra star color pen.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Prince saying like, well, we need it, so we have to take it, but it's sacred to their people. Mm-hmm. And then Kapar tries to take it, and the doggy people say, well, you guys are the same to us. You're both trying to take this thing that's very important to us.
Yeah.
And that was a very, very interesting, I think. For me, I was like, this really sounds like a metaphor. Of course, it's a Japanese show for Japanese kids, but this, like, metaphor works really well in a lot of cultures because colonialism is everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But I think especially it's interesting that it is from Japan, and we have our own history that we have to deal with as well. But let's talk about Tenjo. So she is the second villain. She is all red and she wears a mask to cover her small nose and make it look like she has a much bigger nose, which actually turns out to be very important for her planet where she comes from. Yeah.
It's sad because, like, it's okay to be different. It's just that the people of her planet didn't see it that way. It's just very unfortunate because, like, I think she's beautiful, and I think the other people with their long noses is beautiful because, like, they're just beautiful in their own way. It's just that it was hard for them to see that.
Yeah, I think it's interesting because, like, I would say, you know, the way she's drawn, especially when in terms of her nose size, is what we would call very aesthetically standard for a lot of places on Earth. You know, she has a very small nose, and there are a lot of places, a lot of cultures where that is considered very beautiful. Japan is being one of those places. But that doesn't really matter to her, because what matters to her is that where she comes from, the very, very long nose is
the social norm.
Yeah, like, when you go to her planet, everyone around her has that nose. So it makes sense that that would affect her so.
And it's kind of almost like their long nose is the only thing that defines them. And it's not, like, special interests or anything like that. It's like, if you have a long nose, you're sexy, you know? And stuff like that. And it's just like, that's not how that works.
I think the interesting thing about that episode and about that whole situation is one thing about, like, her planet is that it's not like they're saying outright, oh, this tall nose is the best. But in the very way that they speak about things, they basically have their own adjective, because when they laugh, they throw their head up and suddenly their nose is the highest point on their body. And that's, like, a whole thing. Yeah, every time they compliment something, the same way that we've been saying things are twinkle or kirayaba throughout the season,
in this planet, they're saying everything is very high-nosed as this positive. So when you have a place where in the very language, and this is something that's true in actual cultures and on Earth, you know, sometimes we have language that implies something that we don't necessarily even realize is such. Like, for example, in English, we have the phrase the fairest of them all in fairy tales and so on. And that fair means fair skin. It means light skin. And we don't even think about it. Like, it's just something that is said all the time in books and so on. So it's like that kind of underlying thing where it's like, it's what privilege is, right? Because like in privilege, you don't realize how that's affecting people who are not like you.
Yeah. Which is a good message.
Yeah.
Almost everything about the show has a very good message.
I find that her character and like her storyline, for some people it fell flat, but I think for a lot of people who could understand her feelings, they found it very good.
Yeah. I found it very excellently well executed, in my personal opinion. Because I personally haven't had to experience it firsthand, but as of the time of recording this, things are not looking so hot, you know? It's kind of not great. So it's like, coming back to this season, it's just like, yeah, we should really take notes from this.
Yeah, there are a lot of things that could be great lessons, not just for Japanese kindergartners, but maybe for everyone around the world. Yeah. Okay, let's talk about Iwan. I noticed that in English, her name is transliterated as Iwan, which is interesting, but it doesn't matter. Yeah, Iwan, or I mean, her name is just one I switched around, right?
Yeah.
She's also a very interesting character. I love that she's like, just bright pink skin. Like, when they design these aliens, they just really wanted to make sure everyone is super unrealistic, I guess.
Yeah.
And she has a very distinct way. Again, actually, we didn't mention Tenjo's power also, but like, they all have different ways that they use twisted imagination to create villains. So in her case, she's very tech savvy, and she knows how to take the star color pens of the princesses and turn them into dark pens. She does a lot of different things for using her basically like hacking skills to be a villain. Clearly very smart, but she's still very young. She's definitely a child. Yeah, and she's also the first of the group to kind of break away, though she didn't necessarily want to do that. Yeah.
Many people called her a tsundere, and I thought that was very fitting for later in the season. And there was also Bakunyan,
yeah.
Bakunyan. So, like, he was, like, a cat butler. And he was basically the mentor to Iwan.
Yeah.
And I thought their dynamic was very interesting, to say the least. I think we could talk about that later.
Yeah, just a little later. So, yeah, so her character is very interesting. The figure that she is in conflict with the most is our mid-season Kira, which we'll get into later. Yeah. And do you have any thoughts about Garuga, our Oni alien?
Listen, I literally forgot he was there the majority of the season. Like, he really didn't have a lot, and that kind of made me sad once we brought it up. Because, like, I genuinely do not remember his story arc, like, at all. But I know he was there because I do remember him beefing with Elena. Actually, it was a bit of both Elena and Madoka. Tenjo was mostly Elena's,
right?
You know, counterpart. But like, he took on both of them pretty much equally.
Yeah, I think part of it has to do with the fact that he is like the second in command. So he's not the main general going out. So he didn't really show up until later at... He's almost, like, seen as the main villain for a while before we meet Darkness. That's also interesting. Before we get into that, let's talk about the Star Princesses real quick. Though there are 12 signs of the Zodiac, standardly speaking, There are 13 princesses because there are two Gemini princesses, but each princess represents a zodiac sign. And yeah, they're very, very powerful princesses. They don't really do anything exactly. they're just kind of there. But, you know, because each one, they come back as the star color pens are returned by the Precure.
In my opinion, I don't know if you watched the 2010 My Little Pony.
I haven't, but...
They were, to me, the same thing as Princess Celestia.
Okay.
And I remember during the season when it was airing, I remember everybody was making memes about the princesses and how they're basically evil. And I was like, oh no. It was so funny at the time and it was just great. Like, I just loved it for some reason. The chaos was amazing.
That's interesting.
My most favorite ones, besides everything else, I think was the one with the measuring things. I cannot remember her name right now.
I think that would be Libra, no?
I mean, I'm not good with zodiacs.
That's okay. Yeah, Libra is a scale, so yeah.
Yeah.
I don't see it a lot, but it's very easy to make comparisons between this season and Sailor Moon, because Sailor Moon is very much based in space. But like one of the differences in Sailor Moon is that all of the Sailor Scouts, if you will, are also the princesses of their respective planets. So they kind of have those two things. But in this particular season of Precure, we have this group of princesses who are powerful, but they don't necessarily do much in the actual main storyline. But at the same time, then, you know, we have the Precure, a separate group that they have to utilize their power, basically. I just want to, like, kind of jump over to talking about our mid-season cure, because it's been a while. We've been chatting quite a bit. So this is a spoiler alert time for anyone who has not watched this season yet. As you mentioned before, Aiwan has a butler assistant slash like mentor named Bakenyan, who is this like older cat's character. And there's also an early episode of the series where we discovered there is like this super awesome cat idol named Maotan, who's like...
I love her.
Yeah, she's very cute, and Prunes is a huge fan of her because her music helped him to gain the courage and so on.
He was in for a rude awakening.
Oh yeah, because it's in that same episode that we discovered that this idol is actually the Phantom Thief Blue Cat. So there's kind of this sub-story throughout the first half of the season where... they are learning to become friends with her and understand why she's going around stealing jewels from this particular planet. That's when we discovered that her planet of Rainbow actually was attacked by none other than Aiwan. She's the only survivor of this attack. Yeah, so like all the other people, they were turned to stone, so they're not dead, luckily. But she needs to seek out revenge, and also because... the planet no longer is producing this particular jewel that's so gorgeous. People are now selling it as this super prized item. So she's going around trying to steal this thing, these things back. Again, sounds familiar. Let's look at colonialism.
I love it.
And, you know, of course, because she is stealing, she's considered the bad one. But that's like a thing where it's like, who is good, who is bad.
Moral problems.
Yes. So eventually, as everything is figured out, she gets the strength to become Cure Cosmo. And that's when we discover her name is Yuni. Oh, that's a very good episode also. It like, is. That was my first episode of Star Jingle Precure that I watched. That was during the time where I couldn't watch Precure live on TV. So that was just like one morning that on Sunday, I didn't have to work early. So I could stay home to watch this show. And it's a good episode. Yeah.
It very much is.
So she's another alien, right? She's a cat alien. But unlike Lala, she doesn't join the school, and so she doesn't participate in those activities. She just always kind of lazes about and, like, doesn't really do much. And then when it's time to steal something, she does. And when it's time to become Precure, she does. Yeah. Sometimes she'll do, like, outside of school stuff with people, and they're like, who are you again? That's fun, too. But yeah, what do you think about Yuni or Cure Cosmo?
I must say that I do actually really like Yuni. I really, really like her in her story arc. I think it was very nice because, like, she initially didn't really care for Earth. But then, like, as she spent more time with Hikaru and Elena, like, those two specifically, and as well as Madoka, they showed her, like, hey, we changed the way that we view stuff because Hikaru helped us change through the magic of imagination, and that this is why we're fighting to not only make sure the Earth does not die, but also to protect everybody's imagination. Imagination is basically not only for humans, you know what I mean? So I thought it was, like, very nice that they tried to show her how to accept that some things are not going to always end up how you want it to be, but you can also make the best out of those kind of situations.
Yeah, there's just a lot about alienation and, like, in her case, especially being the last of her kind for a while, presumably. There's a lot of different stuff going on there. But yeah, her character is very interesting because she's so different from Lala, especially. Lala's like, oh, well, where I come from, I'm already an adult, but let's try out this school thing and all of that. And it's like, you know, she's very much trying to immerse herself in the culture, so to speak, and learn more about things. And I think her character is also just popular because she's so cute, and her Cosmo form is also very cute. She's got this, like, rainbow skirt going on, but she's mostly blue-themed. One thing I really find hilarious also is that while her form on Earth is not her true form because she has, like, fur and stuff when she's on her planet, when she's on Earth, she still has, like, cat ears and a cat tail, and no one questions it.
It's just great. Like, they're like, you know what? She's probably just an otaku or a hardcore anime fan. So we're just gonna let her be and just respect her interests.
Yeah, I think it's, like, more like they just think that she's, like,
she's having a phase or something.
Yeah.
Especially because cat girls are not really a big thing right now. Not compared to, like, 20 years ago. But let's see. Shall we go into some specific episodes or story arcs?
Sure.
Speaking of having stuff with aliens and the school. So, you know, Madoka's father is very wary of aliens, and he spends the entire season worried about aliens, trying to find aliens. He's always almost getting to them, and then he sees something involving Lala and decides to investigate because he doesn't trust her. Now, of course, throughout the season, Lala has been a part of school and has made friends with everyone because she's good at that, and because Hikaru is really good at making friends also. But suddenly in episode 40, everything changes.
It was very sudden, in my opinion, just very sudden. Okay, so Madoka's dad goes to the school and interviews all the students, saying, hey, we think Lala might be an alien, and basically gaslighting them to almost exclude her, shall I say.
Well, he's saying, we're looking into the possibility of her being an alien. Do you know anything? And, you know, throughout the season, there have been these moments with Lala and the other students where they're kind of trying to understand what she's about and they don't really know. And it's like, you know, like, she's saying she's from another country, of course, not from another planet. But yeah, like, for example, she has a kind of tic where she says loon after everything. When she is talking and you can't understand what she's saying, it just sounds like she's saying loon, 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 loon over and over and over.
And it was so cute.
It is very cute. So Hikaru and Lala come to school, and it's like this weird moment where everyone is just becoming so cold to Lala, and she doesn't understand why. It's very clear, like, something is wrong. Hikaru also knows something is wrong, and then, you know, it's not until Lala, like, goes away to do something and Hikaru confronts them that they find out they all think that Lala is an alien who is, like, abducting them and...
Yeah, brainwashing them and stuff. And it's just like, wow, yeah, heartless. Like, I was really just like that. I was like, wow, yeah, terrible. But I do understand it.
It's complicated. I could understand why it seems sudden, but I think that it kind of worked because, like, They had shown over the course of the series that there were some things where the characters were not really sure about her. And of course, by this point, many of the students at school have become victims of the Knot Raiders.
Mm-hmm.
It's like this very simple thing where it's like humans want to find patterns in things. And so it's like they put the wrong pattern together.
Humans are very intelligent and they're very curious. So like, it's basically how like we got so many things, like I said, about folklore earlier, like the kappa, mermaids even. We all get our information from somewhere, you know what I mean? We're going to piece things together that might not even go together. So it's like very interesting how they'll be like, okay, so it kind of makes sense now why we're not remembering. Maybe it's because she is actually an alien instead of them, you know, being absorbed by a giant creature and it puts them to sleep in a nightmare state.
Yeah, the same thing happened earlier on Lala's planet, actually, of Saman. Basically, the wrong pattern was put together. And so for a moment, Lala was considered a criminal and all of the other characters that were actually Precure were considered criminals because they assumed that she was trying to steal the princess pen. And yeah, it's a very interesting episode also.
It's just assumptions.
Yeah, just like people making the wrong assumptions and acting on them. And that's something that throughout the series, I think, is an important thing also. Yeah.
I feel like Star Twinkle Precure shows a lot about humanity, shall I say, and how we'll assume something based off the wrong information.
Yeah, I think so. They definitely could do more with that, but I think this is, again, like, science fiction loves to do this, so they take the idea of planets and they use them as an analog for Earth. So yeah, it's pretty cool. You know, and this is near the end of the season where the girls all have to acquire Twinkle Imagination. And this is like the episode where Lala gets hers and she is defending her class, even though they've spent the entire episode just like refusing to talk to her and stuff. Like, for me, I was like, you don't have to do that, Lala. Like, you could be mad at them, you know?
Yeah, but she's not that kind of person.
Yeah.
Her development from the beginning, she probably wouldn't have saved them, you know? But now that she's like gained that friendship with them and that bond, that's something that she doesn't want to lose.
Right.
So, like, she's fighting to keep that and show them, hey, I'm not gonna hurt you. Please don't assume that I will hurt you because I love you, you know? Like, love is very powerful. Love will help you get through certain things. And that was one of the things that helped her get through it because, like, she loves Earth, basically, now.
Yeah, it's very interesting because they are friends, but it's also a thing where she should have been angry, at least for a minute, but I guess Hikaru was angry for her.
She deserves to be angry at them.
Yeah.
She deserves to be very angry at them, but I'm kind of glad that she didn't take that route.
Okay, so let's talk about Elena and Tenjo. So the general villains and the cures, there's kind of like these different duos butting heads throughout the season. And in Elena's case, her villain of this is Tenjo. So as we mentioned, on Tenjo's planet, you know, everyone has a very long nose. Tenjo is the exception for that. She was born with a small nose, and so she stands out where she lives, and it's something that bothers her so much that she wears a mask with a long nose on it almost to hide that fact. This is a parallel for Elena. So we haven't talked about it yet. Elena's a whole thing, of course, like we said, she is Mexican and Japanese. She has darker skin than pretty much every character in the series. There are earlier episodes that kind of discuss this difference, especially because she has a very large family and some of her siblings also experience some of this kind of disconnect from family because her family is like so wonderful and so full of love. I love seeing them together because like they're all so great. so giving, and like you can see in all the kids, there's just all of this love and sunshine and everything, and that's the whole thing with her sun-themed whole aesthetic. And you know, she is the same, but her whole thing is like she is the sun of the school. She's always smiling because that is her thing. She wants everyone to smile, so the best way to make people smile is to smile at them first. And so she's always working to make others happy. And it becomes the whole thing where Elena's mother actually becomes a victim of the non-raiders, where she is worried that Elena is not smiling for herself. She wants to see Elena's real smile. It's a whole thing. And it's...
That was a very good arc.
Yeah, it's very heartbreaking. And it's very interesting because, yeah, she has spent her whole life making others happy and understanding the power of smiling, because she wants to see others smile. She is always worried about, you know, standing out. She's worried about being different. She's trying to, like, force her own narrative, I guess you could say. So that also includes making her family happy, and that's why her mother is unhappy with what's going on. But yeah, and then at the same time, the idea of like what laughing means is very different for Tenjo, who comes from this planet where everyone is laughing, and the laughter feels different. It's a different concept. It feels very patronizing and a very different experience from the smiles that Elena experiences, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I'm gonna say this, like, especially with my generation being Gen Z, with pretty much almost every kid having depression.
Oh, don't worry, that's millennials too.
We pretty much try to make others smile before thinking of ourselves. Again, I truly think that's also a message that many people should take into consideration, because, like, I do it very often, and I know I do it often, but I try so hard not to do it, but that only makes me do it more. And it's, you gotta learn to, also, you gotta take care of yourself first, and then try and help other people the best to your abilities, you know?
Yeah.
Again, Star Trek Figure is so full of good messages, and this is another one of them.
Yeah, absolutely. So, like, the whole thing is this lesson of, again, putting yourself before others, not meaning that you should come first, but like just to have compassion for yourself. That also becomes Elena's compassion for Tenjo. She explains that she understands Tenjo's feelings. So like Tenjo feels out of place in her world because she has a small nose in this world where everyone's nose is long or high. And in Elena's case, she, it's so heartbreaking to see this scene where she shows, like, it shows her as a kid looking at her hands and seeing, like, she knows, even if no one says so,
she's different.
Yeah.
And that's honestly, like, probably one of the most human and real things that came out of Star Twinkle Prickier, is that, like, in other countries where dark skin or even light skin is not normal, it feels almost like you're just an outcast, despite it probably most likely being the opposite. I've heard in Japan, there's like foreigners who live there, they find friends, and that they get like a really good bond with Japanese friends. And it's just something that you cannot change. Basically, you can't change your skin color no matter how hard you try to. Everybody is unique in their own way, and that's one thing that Star Twinkle Prickier really shows well, is that like Elena is different, yes, but she is also very unique, and not only just because of her skin color, but because she is very compassionate and very empathetic. She tries her best to make people happy. That's one of her major struggles, is that she keeps trying to make people happy when she's in turn is not making herself happy. She is literally called the sun of the school.
Yeah.
We have such a diverse cast, and not just because they're alien or they're part Mexican. They're very diverse, in personality as well. And it's like when Tanjo sees that, it's just like she sees Elena having friends that are so different compared to her and her dark skin. And she's like basically yearning for that connection, but people on her planet are very condescending. And it's like I said before, this season is so human. It's unbelievable. Again, you're gonna hear me say that so many times. It's just great. I love it.
One thing that I think is very intentional about this season, especially in relation to Lala and Elena's storylines, is that they used Lala for these storylines about like these different kinds of bullying and so on, but not Elena, even though in reality, Elena probably would get bullied when at least when she was younger. Maybe not by high school, usually, but you know, or middle school. But still, like that is absolutely a thing. Even half Japanese, half white people who grow up in Japan get bullied, and it's gonna, you know, be more accentuated if you have, in this case, like darker skin. It's something that I think was a deliberate choice because this is a show for kindergartners. They wanted the lesson to be there, but maybe I think in terms of like writing a mixed race character like this, like having it all be on her, like especially with bullying and stuff, that would have been too much, I think.
They felt like they probably would have been treading on some toes there if they. I feel like that they were trying to be as respectful as possible, especially since race in general is a very sensitive topic in many people's eyes, which it shouldn't be, but unfortunately, it is a very simple, sensitive topic.
There was, I think it was earlier this year, I want to say, that Nike Japan had a commercial showing students. I think there were real students who experienced some sort of bullying in school, and like there's one who was ethnically Korean person who was in Japan, and another who was mixed race, and some other people. And there were a lot of people very upset by that. And again, it's like a commercial, like it's like 90 seconds of something. So I could see that also being a thing where if they showed Japanese people bullying Elena's character, there would have been some backlash, I think.
I don't know if it would come much from the international side compared to it coming more for the Japanese side, because I feel like for some reason I feel like the international side would have been like, yeah, this is unfortunately common even for us, even though like America's very diverse.
I think that that can depend a lot because there are a lot of places in America that are not diverse.
Unfortunately.
Yeah, like it really, really, really depends on where you grew up, but that's a whole other conversation. But like, I think that it's hard to say because this is also a season that hasn't been taken out of Japan yet. Like, there it is on IC, I think it's a Chinese broadcasting service. It's there for Chinese audiences, but otherwise it's not really in a lot of places yet. And I think that I don't know what the international reaction would have been to something like that, but we wouldn't really know yet because, again, like this is not something that has been officially released outside of Japan other than that one website.
It's unfortunate. I do genuinely hope that Crunchyroll decides to sub it, or like another official. The international space would really need to take some notes from Star Twinkle
Yeah, it's a very strong season, so I do hope that Toei decides to do that because, I mean, slowly we're working on it. I think it's possible with the success of other streaming seasons on that website. Yeah. Let's talk about the finale. We haven't mentioned yet our very big bad Darkness, so we can kind of mention Darkness now. Again, looking at previous seasons, there's a lot going on in this season that's very much like previous season. So, for example, all the cures each have their one signature move. This is very much like ES Precure 5. This is very much like Smile Precure. But at the same time, those moves can get upgraded using the Star Color pens. So, for example, Pure Star has a Star Punch, but she can upgrade her Star Punch using the Princess Power. And then the other thing that's very much like previous seasons is our big bad is completely covered up, wearing this suit of armor that's pretty cool, and you cannot see their face for most of the series, and they have a very clearly distorted voice as well. Yeah, so then it's not until the final battle, after all the princesses have gathered together and all these things are happening, that they all have to go to the Star Palace, which is where the Star Princesses live, to defend them from Darkness' whole group, the Not Raiders. They all come there, and that is when finally it's revealed, even to the other villains, who also didn't know, that Darkness is actually the last Star Princess, Ophiuchus.
That messed me up so much. I was like, what? I was genuinely so confused, like, what? My brain just could not understand. I was like, huh?
This is a very interesting thing that they did, and this is not even the first time that this particular concept has come up on the podcast, because this also came up in the Star Darlings, which is also Zodiac-based. But Ophiuchus is the 13th Zodiac, the snake eating its own tail. It is a very specific thing that could technically be part of the Zodiac, but isn't. I don't know why, but sure, whatever. That part, I don't know reasons. I haven't looked into that, but that is a thing. And so it makes sense that this would be the villain. It's the last princess. In this case, actually number 14, because again, there are two Gemini, whatever. Yeah, so she is like super powerful. She's cool. Like, I do kind of wish she revealed herself earlier, but she's like super powerful. So, you know, this is something where we learn, like, the Star Princesses literally created the universe. And that includes Ophiuchus.
Yeah.
It's not until after the princesses decided they wanted to use half of their power to create imagination in the universe. Just giving everyone power, like literally the power of imagination. And Ophiuchus was like, no, I don't want to give up my power. What are you talking about?
Yeah.
So she was kind of removed from the group. And that is a very interesting part in itself, but like, yeah, gosh, she's so powerful. And that's also when we figure out that actually, like, the other most powerful being in the universe is Fua, who had gained more powers and, like, more speaking ability by the mid-season when all the Star Princesses were rescued. She becomes a unicorn, who's so cute, and she becomes, like, more and more powerful. But yeah, it turns out literally they put half of all the power in the universe into this tiny little fairy. So it's, very interesting final battle. And yeah, I don't know, what do you think about the finale episodes?
I cried.
Oh, yeah.
I will be very honest, I definitely cried. I want to say I love it. I really want to say I love it. But also part of me is like, what the heck was actually going on in those last few episodes? It is just like, I loved it. I really did. But my brain was just like, what? My brain could not compute.
There's a lot going on those last few episodes. Yeah.
It was shocking when we found out that Darkness was actually a princess. That's one. Two, it was also shocking that we found out the No Traitors is actually not what they look like from the costumes.
Yeah, they're all individual.
Yeah, that was very shocking, because I genuinely thought at first that they actually looked like that.
Right.
Then what happened with Fua, that was like, what? That was mind-blowing. And then, like, we found out that the princesses gave up their imagination just to create life. And I'm just sitting here like, why would you do that?
Yeah.
It's just like, I kind of get why. Like, I get why Darkness doesn't want to give up her power. And the fact that you could twist that imagination, as we saw multiple times within the series. And it's just like, wow. The endings, the few last episodes was just wow. It was just mind-boggling. It was tear-inducing. I quite honestly felt bamboozled. It was just like, I can't help but just say wow.
Yeah, especially considering, you know, a series like this having almost 50 episodes where you have this long-running thing going on all year. To have such a big twist at the end, like the last month of the series, suddenly everyone's like, what? What? That's very interesting. Yeah, I also definitely cried because we see Fua sacrifice herself to defeat Ophiuchus, and it's such a powerful scene, of course.
Yeah.
And then the saddest part is that it doesn't quite work because Ophiuchus is still around afterwards.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, when that happened, I genuinely actually, like, I verbally screamed out, Fua, no! Like, I was in tears. I was in snot, but just in tears. I was like, no!
Yeah, it's very intense, for sure.
I'm getting emotional just thinking about it.
Of course, yeah. It's a very emotional part. Like, the level of sacrifice is, like, especially because, like, Fua is, like, the sweetest character on the planet, like, so pure and wonderful.
She's baby. She's literally just baby.
Yeah, she is a baby. This sacrifice that she makes is so, it's so heart-wrenching because you don't want her to go. And, you know, also just generally the way that's handled after Ophiuchus, like, comes back, turns everything into darkness. Just the whole universe is suddenly gone.
Oh my god. I love that scene.
Yes.
I love that scene very much because it's like, I love their transformation scenes. It's just like when that happened and they were just chilling in the darkness, Yukiru was so sad, and then like she started getting that motivation. She's like, Kirameku. And I'm just like, ah, they're all so pure and precious. And I'm just, like, I'm actually genuinely about to start crying just thinking about it. Like,
this season, they sing when they transform, and it's such a beautiful thing. Like, I still wish that they would actually do it more in the future.
Same.
They did such a great job with that concept, not just in the actual series itself, like in this finale, but also in the movie. They do a really good job with that. But gosh, it's just a lot, but it's really great. And they sing together, you know, like that is able to bring them back, even though they have lost all their powers and stuff.
Yeah, it was beautiful. Hikaru is basically what Minatsu is in Tropical Rose. Like how Minatsu is literally the embodiment of motivation, Hikaru is literally the embodiment of imagination.
That makes a lot of sense, yeah. It's very powerful and it's really great.
Mm-hmm.
So everyone comes back and it's really moving and they have the final battle, final attacks and stuff. By the way, the attacks in this season are also top-notch.
I love them.
Yeah.
They're great.
And also Fuo comes back, which is very important. They sacrifice the last bit of their power to become Precure in order to bring Fuo back. And that's, it's like a very sweet sacrifice, but of course it becomes very bittersweet. And that
sad
ending is, so yes. Hikaru and Lala have a very, very strong friendship. Some people do interpret it as more than just a friend, but it's this very, very, very intense, very powerful ending, I think, where they have to, because of that, like, missing power and all that, they lose their ability to communicate with each other, basically, because Fua's power had made it so that Lala could talk to everyone as if she could speak Japanese. And so suddenly she realizes her power is gone, like, she is speaking again, and it just sounds like Loon Loon Loon, and she realizes no one else can understand her. But she still is able to say, Hikaru, thank you. And it's so sad. Oh my god, it's like so beautiful as they say goodbye.
Yeah.
And then in the final episode, of course the final episode always shows our next Precure main character. But in this particular season, we also get to see their future. And that's also really great.
I love that episode. That's nice.
Yeah, so they don't go into a lot of detail, but we see that, you know, everyone's future jobs. We see Lala and Yuni do work together sometimes. And Aiwan now works on Yuni's planet of Rainbow, which is very interesting.
Redeeming herself.
yeah, that was really good. Hikaru becomes an astronaut, which is so cool.
I love it.
Yeah, it, like, makes the most sense, but also it's just, like, it's a really great thing to see, like, hey kids, you can be an astronaut, like, imagine.
Yeah.
And they're showing, like, the first trip from a Japanese spaceship to go out into space. And so that's really great. And we see at the very end that they're coming back. So, like, there's going to be a reunion. We don't see the reunion, but we know it's going to happen.
Yeah. And then, like, there was a live show of them as adults going out and getting drunk. It was fun.
Yeah. That's something that people were able to see at the time. I think I can rent that somewhere, probably.
All I remember is seeing pictures of it, and I was like, dang, I wish I could watch it, but I know I can't.
Yeah. So, like, that's really great that they put that time into thinking about that, and, like, they look different as they're older and everything. It's really nice. Again, just like any season of Precure, we could sit here and talk forever about it. There's so many different things about this season that are so great.
Yeah. It's just amazing.
Yeah. But yeah, is there anything else that you wanted to mention?
In terms of shipping, okay, I do actually ship Lala and Hikaru, but also on another side, I also ship Hikaru with Yuni.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
It's two separate ships, and I think it's just because they have a really nice dynamic.
Mm-hmm.
I even made like a whole story plot.
Ooh.
Of like Yuni and Hikaru, they initially were the ones dating, but then something happened and they split up, and then like as they got older it became Hikaru and Lala. Mm-hmm. And I'm just like, they're awesome. They're just they're just yes.
Yeah. Elena's definitely my favorite character by far, so for me, I'm all about Elena and Madoka as a couple. I think that they would be
really
great. Yes. Yeah.
They would absolutely be wives, for sure.
Yeah. Hopefully, by the time that they are adults, they can be married, so.
Hopefully.
Let's see how that goes. But, yeah. Cloud, thank you so much for talking to me today about Star Twinkle Precure.
No problem. I'm so sorry that I was just, like, honestly rambling so much.
That happens all the time, not to worry. Can you tell us a bit about where people can find you and follow you online?
You can find me at Maho Monthly on Instagram. I post primarily information about like news about upcoming animes or movies or TV shows in general for the magical girl genre, and I also post a bunch of my figures that I collect. And you could also find me at Magical Girl Obsessed on Instagram as well. I primarily post art, a lot of magical girl art. As the name suggests, I'm very obsessed with magical girls. That's really it.
And can you tell us about your webtoons?
Oh god. I have currently 3 webtoons on webtoon.com, soon to be coming to Tapas when I finally get the motivation to do it.
Mm-hmm.
My first main webtoon that I started in 2018, I want to say, is called Supernova, and it's about a black girl who lives in Japan with her friends, and at the moment it's just her and her best friend who are magical girls.
Mm-hmm.
I personally never been to Japan myself, so at this time it's just an alternate Japan, so like everything in these comics are all tied together.
Mm-hmm.
And they're basically our world but alternate versions of it. So right now all I have for information wise is obviously Google, and I try my hardest not to do stereotypes or get information wrong. I try to search up what I can, but that's besides the point. The story is about Nova, who turns into Spirit Warrior Pink, and she is recruited by her family cat, who she didn't know could talk,
mm-hmm.
and he gives her a wand and earrings to help her transform. Right now, we're still kind of in the early phases. We're, like, just about to get over Arc 1, which is called the Nightmare Arc.
Mm-hmm.
The arc is about the 7 deadly sins.
Mm-hmm.
The main villain, she sends out, like, these crystal candies to people who are experiencing highly negative emotions.
Mm-hmm.
And if they are foolish enough to eat it, they turn into bad guys.
Mm.
But most of them, keyword, most eat it without knowing that they'll transform.
Sure.
So, like, they turn into the negative emotion version of themselves and fight Nova and her best friend. Mm-hmm. And Nova is really the only person that can purify the people. Mm-hmm. Everything else is like for her friends to slow them down so she can purify them. And basically the crystal is disintegrated and they turn back to normal people, and they can sort of kind of remember what they did as a bad guy. So like some episodes you will see them saying that they're sorry to people that they may have hurt. Mm-hmm. The next webtoon I'm making, this is the one that I created after Supernova. It's called Dreamcatcher, all one word, but the D in the C for catcher is capitalized. Mm-hmm. It's about a girl named Yumi, and on her 16th birthday, when she's coming home from school, after her friend gave her a very nice gift for her birthday, she is at home blowing out candles to her birthday cake, and she suddenly passes out and wakes up in the dream realm. And once she wakes up in that dream realm, she meets a boy, and from there, a thing that's called a nightmare, and I will refer to it as a thing or it because they're not human. Mm-hmm. They're literally nightmares. They're nightmarish creatures, and there's one specific nightmare that I cannot wait to draw because I love the way I drew it. It's amazing. But these nightmares are basically negative emotions, kind of like Supernova, but in the fact that they can actually kill you. So like this story is more dark in the sense that there's like kidnapping and murder, blood, and ending oneself for at least like a couple characters because of these nightmares and the bad guy. I haven't touched on that story for a while, so like I'm still kind of figuring it out, but mm-hmm. as we go along you will see that within literally the first chapter that it's dark because her sister gets kind of ensnared by a nightmare. The last and most recent story that I started drawing is called Seven Relics Princess, and it's about a girl who finds a fairy, and the fairy gives her something to help her transform into her new self. But since it's not that far along ahead, I will not tell you what the transformation item is, but I will tell you that the first monster is a giant wolf that's chasing down the fairy for that special item. It opens up in a dream sequence with our main character Suki, and she wakes up from this dream that correlates to a story that her brother always tells her, but he never finishes it. So she's going to school, yada yada yada. She meets a girl and they instantly become really close because this girl is very kind to her. And then that's where it all starts to go downhill in terms of Suki's luck. I won't go too far into it, but that's basically the premise of it. And then these are not webtoons yet, but I do have many other stories in terms of like one based around the movie and the actual story of Little Mermaid. Mm-hmm. One about a businesswoman who becomes a magical Playboy bunny girl. Mm-hmm. And I genuinely can't wait to create her design. One that I thought of literally yesterday called Color Corrector, about a young girl who's like, it's basically based off of Cardcaptor Sakura, in which she unleashes creatures that are all different kinds of colors, and those creatures like to absorb color. Mm-hmm. And whatever color they absorb, that thing turns gray and it starts to wither and die. That also includes people. Mm-hmm. So she gotta go around collecting colors. And one of my mutuals actually gave me a really good idea to have those colors be put into little vials as paints and that she could use them. Hmm. I genuinely can't wait to work on that because I want it to be an animation.
Hmm.
I have a lot of ideas, and if you end up following me, you'll see that a lot, that I will come up with a lot of different ideas and that I obviously cannot keep my mind on one idea for too long.
Well, that's cool. So people can check out those webtoons and look forward to more in the future. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Great.
That was a very long ramble.
Yeah, so thank you again for coming on the podcast, and I hope you have a good rest of your day.
Thank you, and thank you for having me. It was very nice to be on the podcast after listening to it. I'm just, thank you so much, Ayu. It was really nice.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Sparkle Side Chats with Magical Girl Ayu. Please subscribe, rate, and review if you like it, and don't forget to tell your friends about the show if you think they'd be interested. If you use social media, don't forget to use the hashtag SparkleSideChats when talking about and sharing the podcast. You can find us on Twitter and Instagram at MagicalGirlAyu, spelled A-Y-U, and you can find me at AyuShinos, AyuShekNows. You can also email us at sparklesidechats@gmail.com. Let us know if there's a topic you want covered or a fan or creator you want to hear from. Show notes can be found on your platform of choice or at anchor.fm/sparkleside. You can also join the Discord for this podcast and talk about Magical Girls 24/7, often chatting directly with me and both previous and upcoming guests of the podcast. Just contact me for an invite link anytime, or, if you're shy, you can get a public invite every week after the latest episode is released. If you can support the podcast financially, you can buy me a coffee at ko-fi.com/ayushinos. With Ko-fi membership tiers, you can get bonus content, announcements about episode topics, and your name read aloud on the podcast. Original podcast music is by Hazel. You can find her on Twitter at @twinkleparks. Thanks again for listening, and remember, you are magical.